It's a foggy, misty, yucky Monday, but never fear, Gab and Jules are here. We've got a tremendously packed show, so I'm going to try to talk really, really fast. We're going to talk about Chelsea and Spurs, top of the table clash in the Premier League. So many tributes to Diego Armando Maradona, Edinson Cavani, a lot to celebrate, some not so much. But Jules, should we start with Real Madrid?
Oh, yeah. Good story, that.
You like to put the knife into Zidane. Everything goes wrong against Alaves.
Yeah. And it's not just, no, it's not Zidane. I love Zidane, as you know, because he's French. But there's just a lot of things I don't understand, right? Okay, you've got no Sergio Ramos, no Karim Benzema. You still went away and winning Inter Milan, albeit with the big help of Arturo Vidal, but still. And then you go back to being completely insignificant at home, with just nothing in your game. You lose Eden Hazard, which is bad. But why is he starting again? Why do you start him three games in a row? Even if he just plays an hour, I don't care. Surely start him maybe twice and then give him a bit of a rest and bring him on for the last half an hour.
Okay, so Dr. Lauren's diagnosis is that if he comes back from a muscular injury and he plays three games in a row, then he's likely to get injured. Is that it?
No, but why do you risk it anyway? You don't need to risk it like this.
You
he hasn't played for a year. Why do you bring him and play him three games, use three starts in 7 days?
I presume that was on the advice of the medical staff.
I don't know. I thought it was too risky.
I make this point in my musings column. You can parse this game out and you can bring it down to incidents, right? And say, well, VAR was a bit particular with the Nacho one. And by the way, I don't ever want to hear this Real Madrid VAR thing because, you know, that was, I thought it was a handball, it was a penalty, whatever.
Yeah, 100%.
But then equally, Pacheco made a couple of good saves off of Toni Kroos. You had the Marcelo hair pull. The reason VAR didn't pick that one up was that wasn't filmed from an official broadcast feed camera. That was apparently was a private camera from one of the Spanish rights holders, Movistar.
Yeah.
And so that didn't get seen. And then you have the Hazard injury and you're a bit and Courtois makes a tremendous mistake. So
they could
put those things together, they could have won.
Really?
If all those things had gone their way. No, but
okay, who are the biggest chances? Who created the most?
Well, that's
Lucas Perez.
This is why I absolutely hate those people. Like, it's all about results at the end of the day. It's all about results. No, it's not. It's about performance. Real Madrid could have won this game easily with exactly the same performance. And they still would have stunk. They really would have stunk out of the place. Marco Asensio, who I absolutely love, and not just because he's named for Marco Van Basten, had an absolute stinker of a game. Oh, sorry, I didn't even mention Isco hitting the post at the end. There you go. There's another one, crossbar, tremendous finish. Would have been a tremendous goal. Asensio was bad. Defensively, I thought Varane, again.
Yeah.
Again,
I have to agree.
Issues. The midfield, I get it. Casemiro's getting tired. But come on, impose yourself. When Alaves pressed, and they didn't press high, they pressed intermediately.
Yeah.
And they did it very effective with Pablo Machin knows how to do this kind of stuff. Every time, they can't play their way through it. And then Benzema gets hurt. And then Mariano, whatever. He can't help it.
He's
Mariano.
I don't know why Marcelo still... you had Reguilón, who would have been a perfect left back with Mendy. Why is Marcelo still there? I don't care that he's experienced, one of the oldest in the dressing room, vice captains, all of this. He's just not good enough. He's not good enough to play those games. Zidane, since coming back, has lost 10 La Liga games. Guess what? Who started those 10 games? Marcelo, thank you very much. Every time he's a liability when he plays.
All right, the worrying thing is they ask Zidane about this and he says, well, I don't know what's wrong.
I don't believe that. I don't believe.
A manager saying, don't go and bust my chops.
Yeah,
I have an idea what's wrong. I don't want to tell you.
Surely.
Yeah, all right. So we shouldn't make a big deal of that.
Yeah, we didn't mention Fede Valverde, who's just by his intensity, they're missing him so much. By the runs he makes into the box, you've got none of that. If you play Cruz, Casemiro and Modric and Cruz don't run into the box. They just wait for the ball onto their feet. That's all they do. You just can't play one dimension of football like this.
Let's throw this forward to the Champions League because obviously, they're not out of the woods yet. It's not just about finishing first. They might not finish first. They might not qualify at all. Big game coming up against Shakhtar. They're going to be fine. I presume Ramos and Benzema didn't start because they're keeping them safe for that.
Yeah.
They come back, everything fine? At least in the Champions League?
At least against this Shakhtar team,
get the win, yeah. You're kind of home free, and then
yeah. But then you've got on. Sevilla away in the league next weekend. Then you've got the Madrid derby the yeah. following weekend, plus the other Champions League match.
And that
one will be far bigger.
And that's where things get hairy. It feels to me, on the surface, one reading of this is that Zidane made certain choices as managers who've been successful, as every manager has been successful, or most of them do. They say, well, I'm loyal to my old guard, the guys who've been there, who've done that. You know, earlier you mentioned Reguilón. I could mention a lot of people. I could mention Hakimi. I could mention Gareth Bale. No, just kidding. Borja Mayoral. You know,
yeah.
Borja Mayoral may not be a superstar, but he's clearly better than Mariano,
yeah,
I think.
Definitely.
And he's made these choices to stay loyal to his people. He's made the choice. He hasn't gone to Sergio Ramos and said, Sergio, if you want to continue playing with me, you can't run around the pitch and play the way you did with the one-on-ones because, you know, you're going to make Varane worse and you're going to make yourself worse. He's stuck with it. I feel uncomfortable reading it like this, but it's hard to read it a different way, isn't it?
They've come good for him, though, right? So until now, and even now, he can still tell you, but let's wait until the end of the season, because like last year, when they were not great, they still ended up winning La Liga, and they might do that again. They might win the Champions League for, you know, I don't know. They might do something, and then he can tell you. And then the plan was always next summer to just shake things up completely, maybe say goodbye to Luka Modric, to Marcelo, bring Kylian Mbappe, Erling Haaland, Paul Pogba, whoever you want. I don't care.
But it is, though, one of those things about, you know, they say the hardest thing in sports is deciding when, you know, you want to let a guy leave a year early rather than a year late, right?
Yeah.
I look at the Modric situation most of all. You know, he had that tremendous season, the Ballon d'Or season, the contract dispute, whatever. You know, now Modric is, I think, in the best 11. He is, you know, the first midfielder off the bench, realistically, right?
Yeah.
Because you're going Kroos, Valverde, and
Casemiro.
If he'd gone, he said, look, Luca, you're not going to play very much next season. If he'd gone to the club, I'm not going to use this guy much. You know, it's good. Like, please show him the door. If he had done the same with Marcelo, then maybe you would have freed up space that you could have made different decisions. And you're not going to face a situation where, you know, all of a sudden, next time we can talk about this, right? But all of a sudden, you know, you talked about, you know, rebuilding and you brought up Mbappe Hole and whatever. Yeah, that's great. But reality. Benzema, 30-something. Ramos, 30-something. Hazard, 30-something. Kroos, 30-something. Modric, well past 30. Casemiro's got to be approaching 30 if he's not 30 already.
I think Kroos is up, yeah.
It becomes a lot tougher to do.
Yeah, and then Luka Modric is very clever. When he speaks before the Champions League match against Inter, he says, hey, I would love to finish my career here. I'm so happy. Look, I play great. I'm here. I'm involved. I play. I start. So you've put yourself into a position where when the player is intelligent like Luka Modric is and put that out there by saying, hey, now if you don't give him a new deal or if you don't, you know, if he doesn't finish his career there, he will say, oh, I'm so disappointed. I really wanted to stay. And look, they didn't trust me and they didn't do this and they didn't do that. And I just think you put yourself in a very difficult position where you could have dealt with it in an easier way.
And
but like you say, by just saying like, listen, you know, you've been great for us since you moved from Spurs, what, 5 years ago or something?
You know what I would like to see? I would like to see more of this. I think people are going to think I'm obsessed with wages or need Arsenal.
Oh, but, 30 years something.
What? Sorry?
Or 30-year-old something.
Yeah, but I would have gone, I go to the players and I say, look, Luca, you've been tremendous. You should have won the Ballon d'Or, blah, blah, blah. You're not going to start this year. But you're making starter money. You're making a lot of money.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you to take a pay cut. We can fill in with bonuses or whatever if you want to finish your career here.
Yeah, maybe.
I would like to see more of that. Instead, players always take it. You know, why do players care about their salary? It's a way of keeping score. And, you know, the club that manages to crack that, because you either have clubs who are ruthless or clubs who sit there, oh, well, he's been so good, right? It's the Aubameyang principle, right? And I'd like to see clubs show a little bit more intestinal fortitude when it comes to this, and then maybe we wouldn't be in this situation. Now, all that said, though, this is not the reason, I think, that Real Madrid have been underperforming.
No.
Is it?
No, I know. There's other issues there. There's other problems.
So what is it?
lack of intensity. I mean, it was pretty obvious on...
And lack of intensity comes from having it, but that takes us back to the 30-somethings.
Yeah, of course. The only way you can beat Alaves and the way they press with that sort of, you know, medium block is to have a bit of intensity in your game, which they didn't have. I thought they were lethargic at times. And even with that, they still created chances, like you said earlier. So, yeah, of course, they could have won the game and we would have said, OK, it wasn't great, but they still won. They find a way of winning, which would have been true. I just don't think you can play a whole season with not intensity at all in your midfield or even up front. And I just think...
But they're playing twice a week, though.
You know, of course they are. But then maybe that's when you change a bit more, you do something a bit different in your tactics than just playing your 4-3-3. Like, did he really think that 4-3-3 against a team like Alaves, who are not by any means the greatest team on earth,
no,
but you know
not.
Exactly, Alaves played exactly like we thought they would. They did exactly what they would do, like Cadiz did, and they won at the Di Stefano Stadium. This is exactly, and you know it before, and yet you still go, okay, let's put that team on, let's just keep the ball and see, and we will create something. This I don't think is good enough from Zidane to just expect that with that team you go out there because you are at home. Then it would be enough. I just don't think they did enough in the intensity, in the desire to go forwards, in the effort they put together. I just don't think it was enough.
See, where I struggle with, if I go back and I look at Zidane's 11 and I look at his game plan, I can see a logic to almost every decision that he made, right? So I don't have Benzema. All right, Mariano's terrible, but at least he's a center forward, right?
Yeah.
So I still have that reference point.
Instead of playing your force number nine, you mean like an Isco? Or
exactly.
Like
why
that?
Change
okay.
that? You know, let's keep the system because it helps Hazard.
Yeah.
You know, the medical staff tells me, am I putting Hazard at risk? No, I'm not. Okay, fine. Let's play him and let's try to mimic as best I can the conditions that will be there when Benzema returns.
Yeah.
So let me play Hazard. Asensio was terrible. I'll be the first one to say that. But Asensio has to get on the pitch. Somebody has to be that third guy. Let's audition Asensio this game. You don't like it, maybe next game it's Vinicius, maybe next game it's Rodrigo, maybe it's whoever. Rodrigo came on, I thought that all right.
Yeah.
But somebody's got to play, right?
And then
these guys, then they play, and then they don't seize the opportunity. I mean, I would almost put the onus more on people like Asensio, who had a stinker, than Zidane's choice of playing Asensio.
But it was so easy for Alaves to defend because of the way Real Madrid set up. Play 4-4-2, play Hazard just behind Mariano. Then Hazard would play in between the lines of Alaves. It would be easier for you to beat that press because you would expect Hazard to be intelligent enough to find those little pocket of spaces, which would make your first pass from the back easier. It was too easy. Jose Lu and Lucas Perez, the way they pressed was far too easy. You only had to basically block Casemiro.
I can only assume he didn't do that because he figured, I've got Lucas Vázquez and Marcelo, so I've got two guys who are going to provide the width that way.
Yeah.
I can't play Lucas Vázquez and Marcelo and play two wingers on top of that.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. But
It's a tough one. I mean, I think he'll get out of it. All right, let's play the percentage game now in terms of who wins La Liga. Because we have Atleti, who we'll get to, and Barcelona, we'll get to later. Atleti are 1 point now behind Real Sociedad.
With a game in hand.
Two games in hand.
Oh, yeah, one on Real Madrid and two on...
Barcelona, of course, are at least they're on the left-hand side of the table now. What percentages do we give at this stage?
I think Atleti have to be slightly ahead of the other two. I just don't think he's that... I can hear everybody saying, oh, Atleti, huge favourite. If they don't win it, you know, it's a failure. Is this, is that? I don't think it's, they're that ahead. And I saw them against Lokomotiv. I saw them again against Valencia. I'm sorry, even without Luis Suarez, like, you know, even if Suarez comes back or Diego Costa, I don't think they're that amazing.
I thought they played really well against Valencia. I mean, they're lucky on the goal, but I thought they played better against Valencia.
I'm not sure.
Than
I think they still lack cutting edge at times, like against Lokomotiv. So I would put Atleti slightly ahead, but I just don't think the gap is huge between them and Real Madrid and Barcelona either.
All right, I'm going to go Atleti 35%.
Yeah.
Real Madrid 30%.
Yeah, you see? Yeah, you're with me. I'm with you.
And remember, Atleti could get knocked out of the Champions League, which would be a tremendous boost, I think, domestically.
They by who? By Lokomotiv Moscow?
Dude, they have 5 points.
I know, but... It's Salzburg behind them and Lokomotiv Moscow. They're not going to...
points are away. They screwed up and they still have to play Bayern.
Yeah, they play Bayern at home. And
the way this Bayern's...
I think they will qualify.
We're good. Yeah. Okay, so Atleti 35, Real Madrid 30. Barca 20.
Yeah, and then keep a little for Real Sociedad.
For Real Sociedad or Villarreal, actually.
Yeah, do 10 and 5.
Yeah, I'll go 13 and 2. Come on. Let's not get carried away with Villarreal here. I know you love the man, but still.
Yeah, you know.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Real Madrid, because we had a top of the table clash in the Premier League between Chelsea and Spurs. It finished 0-0 in the end. Very few chances, although a very good one for the very handsome Olivier Giroud, came on as a substitute. But I want to kind of get a health check on these two teams. Do they look like champions, like potential champions? What do they need to do? And who better to tell us this than our resident tactician, Stuart Robson? Robbo, welcome aboard. Let's start with Chelsea. I think they have a nice balance with the way they're set up now, with a genuine center forward, whether it's Abraham or Giroud, and kind of that, what do you call it, 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3, Ziyech, especially on the right. What say you?
Yeah, I think when Frank Lampard first bought Timo Werner, I thought he felt as though he was going to play him down the middle. But he realised that there was no link-up play, there was no hold-up play, they couldn't go from back to front particularly quickly. And that's why he's brought in Tammy Abraham. What I would say with Tammy Abraham, he's got to show that he's got the quality to hold the play up, because at the moment, I don't see definite runs from him. You want from a centre-forward, somebody that's going to give you definite runs. Whether it's spinning in behind, you've got to make sure you tell the player, that's where I want the ball, or you go long to come short. And whenever I see Chelsea players on the ball, I'm not sure they can find Tammy Abraham as much as they would want to. They can't see definite runs from him. So that's something that I think Frank Lampard has got to improve. And I don't think he's going to get that from Olivier Giroud at the moment either, because over the last 2 or 3 years, Olivier Giroud, yes, he's been held up as a hold-up player, but I don't think he's done it particularly well. And the other problem they've got, when crosses come into the box, is Tammy Abraham going to get on the end of them? And is Olivier Giroud going to get on the end of them? So that's the dilemma at the moment I think Frank Lampard's got. He would have liked to have played Timo Werner up front when he first bought him. He'd have liked to have played Pulisic down one side and Ziyech down the other side and Havertz maybe, or Mount in behind them. But because it didn't work straight away, he's had to revert back to a centre forward. And I still think he's got to work harder with Tammy Abraham's movement.
So you don't think this is... So are you saying that this is not the answer, or that they need to execute better if they're going to play this formation?
I think it's they need... Or Frank Lampard and his coaching staff need to work with Tammy Abraham more. Yeah, I think...
So stick with the system, but do it better, basically.
Do it better and make sure that Tammy Abraham works harder to find space.
All right. On the Spurs end, I've been impressed with what he's done so far, not so much in this game. Am I wrong?
No, I think the Manchester City game, I didn't think they played quite as well as everybody said they played. Because if you look at the, and I know you like the projected goals that could have been scored in
or
the
even
game.
Expected goals, as we call them in English.
That's the one, expected goals. Manchester City had a lot of chance. They had two headers from point blank range, 6 yards out. They should have scored. So I think they got away with that one. And that's the way that people say, oh, it was a perfect display by Spurs. I'm not sure it was a perfect display. The problem I have with Spurs is at some point they've got to try and dominate games against the weaker opposition. And they haven't even done that against the weaker opposition. They're still trying to play counter-attacking football. And if you do play with a deep line and you concentrate solely on the defensive side of the game, you need a combination at the back that you can rely on week in, week out. When Mourinho was at Chelsea, when he was at Inter Milan, he had two centre-halves that he played all the time, and brilliant centre-halves at that. I'm looking at Spurs centre-halves now, and he's not quite sure what his best combination is.
No, I think he knows.
They're the best defence in the league.
It's Toby and Dyer. Come on, man. We know, right?
They're the best defence in the league after already played City, United, Chelsea now.
But over the course of the season, if you concede chances and concede ground as much as they have, and teams keep getting crosses into the box, eventually they are going to concede.
All right, Dr. Robson, he can't bring in a new player now because the window's not open. So what should he do with what he has to go to the next level? You mentioned dominating games. Is Lo Celso, is it as simple as getting Lo Celso on the pitch more?
No, it's not a thing about personnel. It's about the philosophy of the manager and the game plan. At times, you've got to go and press the ball. Because games will make you have to press the ball. If you're behind in games, you've got to go higher up the field. And I think at times, Spurs have to dominate games, particularly at home against some of the weaker opposition.
But how do they do that?
Late on in the game, you press higher up the field. They've got the players to do it. Song can press the ball. Any player on the Lamella can press the ball when he's playing. Harry Kane can go and press the ball. The midfield players, they've got the energy in midfield to go and press the ball. The fullbacks can squeeze up that little bit higher. They can do it. It's just the philosophy of the manager. At the moment, he wants them to drop, let the opposition have the ball, and then play counter-attacking football, which works for him most of the time. But there's going to be times, and you're talking about winning the league. To win the league, you're going to have to change your system in certain games and change your philosophy in certain games when things aren't going your way. And that's what Spurs have to do.
All right, instant poll. Who's going to finish higher, Chelsea or Spurs? Robbo?
I think Chelsea are going to finish higher.
Jules?
Spurs.
All right, I'm going to break the tie and say Chelsea. All right, let's go back and get a little bit more granular on this. And I'm going to give you my view about why this setup with the center forward I think is necessary for Chelsea against most opponents. There was a graphic on Match of the Day last night about, Tammy Abraham scored 18 goals since August, but only 4 have been off crosses. You know what? I don't care. The 1970s are over. Right, the idea of the center forward dominating, scoring off crosses.
Where does the threat come from at Chelsea?
Well, the threat comes from the many talented players behind.
Where does the ball go most of the time? On the wings, right?
Yeah.
So crosses are going to come.
No, because
of course they will.
No, because Ziyech isn't Steve Koppel, who used to go to the touchline and cross, right?
But 80% of what Ziyech did yesterday were crosses. No,
that's why you look for knockdowns. You've got players coming from midfield. There's more than one way to skin a cat. And I think Abraham is really important also for one other reason. We've seen Chelsea concede a lot off of defensive set pieces. Tammy Abraham is outstanding, I think, defensively.
So he's not good enough for crosses coming in from your team, but he's good enough on crosses coming from the other team.
He's good enough. Well, I think you'll find that defending a cross and heading it away is a different skill as to actually finishing. It's not like he's terrible. He scored 4 goals off of headers in the past, 15 months, right? No, and he hasn't played all the time, so it's basically a season's worth. I don't have an issue with that. I think you have to go with either Abraham or Giroud against most opponents. Timo Werner is going through a rough patch right now. I think, Jules, you don't think he's a winger.
No.
He's certainly not a traditional winger because you know what's going to come. He's going to come inside. And if he comes inside, he likes to have a big, tall dude there who's unselfish and will work for him and will work the defenders, whether that's Giroud or whether that's Tammy Abraham. He's going through a rough patch now, but he's not always going to be like this. And the nice thing about having depth is he's going through a rough patch. Great. Give Pulisic a run.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Lampard missed a trick yesterday and he was disappointed after the game. He said, we should have won. Okay. Højbjerg and Sissoko systematically dropped, one of them would drop between his centre-back and his full-back, right? So Sissoko between Aurier and Rodon, Højbjerg between Reguilon and...
Or and even Dyer. Rodon.
Rodon, yeah.
And just, well, she's that.
but just, you know, just to be even more secure, at times they played with the back five, even the back six Spurs, which left you a lot of space in midfield free. But because Kovacic and Mount were too deep with Kante... Actually, they were never able to exploit that area of the pitch, but which I think left Abraham too isolated up front with just crosses coming in. That's where the problem comes from. Whereas if you put Kai Havertz at some point, let's say at halftime, or someone there playing as a second striker or just as a central number 10, even Mount if you want, I don't care. But then you suddenly, Højbjerg and Sissoko can't drop like the way they did the whole
but
game.
But that could have been the reading, I think, of this game, right? That could have been an issue. I mean, Robert, I think Jules makes a great point there, but that could have been the way Mount and Kovacic interpreted this game, maybe because under Lampard's instructions or whatever. It doesn't mean that they have to always sit deeper.
No, but they didn't do it in the game to stay a bit cautious.
No, that's fine. But it's
because of the counter-attack from Spurs. So it's, you have to choose. It's either you really want to win the game and you take risk and you might lose it, fair enough, but at least you can also win it. I'm not sure that Chelsea really could. I know Giroud was the chance at the end, but I'm not sure they really did everything they could to win it.
Robbo, the elephant in the room here, because if we accept that Pulisic can go and play for Werner, Pulisic can come in and or he can certainly play for Ziyech as well. Ziyech could play the Mount role. Where does this leave Kai Havertz, kind of the elephant in the room? We've seen him play in a whole bunch of different roles. He's played in the three as well in midfield. I didn't like that. I don't think that worked at all, frankly, unless you play against a really bad side and you've got the ball all the time. Does he fit right now?
I've seen him play in Germany, and I always thought he was a player that drifted around and on his day played very well. But I always considered him to be a little bit of a player that was never going to dominate. He's never going to be the player that's going to take the game by the scruff of the neck. He flits in and out of games. Well, I'm not sure that Chelsea can afford to have a player that flits in and out the games. He played on the right-hand side when he first came and wasn't dominant enough on the ball and didn't make things happen. When you're playing in the number 10 role, you've still got to make runs beyond the centre forward. You've got to go and link up with the centre forward. You've got to try and dominate that area of the field and be the real clear playmaker. And I didn't think he did that particularly well. So I've got a real worry for Kai Havertz at the moment. I can't see where he fits into the side because, as Jules said, Timo Werner, I don't think is the right centre forward. I don't think he's an out-and-out left winger either. He's trying to play through an inside left position. And they're just trying to change the shape slightly, Chelsea, with Chilwell almost being like a left wing-back and Timo Werner going inside in through the inside left position. So at the moment, I can't see where Kai Havertz fits into the side at all.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing. I remind everybody he's still very, very young.
And he has to be coached.
He has to be coached.
I just hope that Lampard on the training pitch, and in general, I still hope they coached him.
He's a club asset. I think Chelsea are generally a pretty well-run club. I don't think, like, if we don't see much of him for the next couple months, I don't think it's a big deal at all, as long as the team is performing. He's there to learn, and I think we'll see the best of him in years to come,
but
if they can crack it.
His timing in the box, he's sensational. And I think yesterday, in a game like this, it could have been a huge help from those crosses or to just have another presence in the box than just Tammy Abraham on his own.
Just want to go back to something that Gab said a little while ago. You say it quite regularly, Gab. Whenever we talk about getting crosses into the box, you say, oh, it's not the 1970s. It's not the 1980s anymore. Crosses are still a massive part of the game.
Liverpool scores many goals like
that. Once they defend narrow, you can't play through them. You have to have plan B, which is to get crosses into the box and make the opposition defend them.
No. Hey, Robert, I'm not suggesting that crosses are not important or width is not important. I'm saying judging a center forward by the number of headed goals he scores, I think is silly. And you have a perfect example in that. You mentioned Liverpool and all their crosses.
Yeah.
Boy, Bobby Firmino is a second coming of Duncan Ferguson, isn't he?
No, but Sadio Mane scores headers.
That's fine. But we're talking about Abraham's getting criticized. He doesn't score enough headed goals. And I say, to me, that's nonsense because you can still do your job as a center forward and be very effective with knockdowns, with dragging people out of position.
But you can also score on a cross without your head, right? This is your cross doesn't have to be a header in the top corner.
Precisely.
Exactly. So, I still think that Tammy Abraham could improve on his movement in the box. And Tammy, watch Cavani in the game against Southampton because this is, by definition, the movement of a number nine.
It is funny. That's a good shot. I was just looking at them physically, their movement. All right, Cavani, I think, is on a different level now. But, Robert, is there a bit of a parallel there, Abraham? Cavani, or are you going to get angry for me even for suggesting that?
No, it's all about the movement in the box. You know, and Cavani, as George just said, he's moving.
But the body type and everything, the effort. I mean, is this, Jules nailed it in drawing an analogy with what Abraham should aspire to be, that he should aspire to be a Cavani type?
Well, I think all around the field, Tammy Abraham, I spoke about it earlier, Tammy Abraham doesn't make it clear where he wants the ball. He's moving. He's not quite sure. He waits for the ball to be passed before making his movement. He needs to be telling the player on the ball, this is where I want the ball. This is how I'm going to make the run. This is how I'm going to find space. That's something that he should have been taught at a younger age, but he still can work at it. He can still get much better at it. I'm not sure what his role in the side is at the moment. You know, when you looked at Drogba when he was playing for Chelsea, you knew what his role in the side was. Cavani, you know what his role when he comes on. He's going to make those little diagonal runs. He's going to be trying to make space in the box. He's not going to link up the play halfway up the field. So they need to define the role that Tammy Abraham has for Chelsea.
All right, you talked about we talked about Spurs. I can't handle you being mean to Tammy any further, so I'm going to move on to Spurs. You talked about them dominating the opposition. You talked about them pressing higher against smaller teams. I tend to think, I mean, their record this season is good, right? I tend to think that Mourinho feels that it's something that he can do when is necessary. Is this something that you can switch on and off?
I think you have to be able to. It's not easy, because if you get into a mentality that we're going to let the opposition have it at the back, we're going to be compact in midfield, we're going to be tight at the back, we're not going to concede too much space in behind us to start with, and then we defend when it goes out wide, we've got a game plan how we defend. So it is difficult then to change your philosophy. We're going to press higher up the field because maybe the midfield players say, do I go and press with the front players? Do I screen the balls into their front players and defend in front of my two centre-halves? So it is a difficult thing to swap, but that's what Mourinho has to do. And we're talking about winning the league. We're not talking about coming third, fourth. We're talking about what do you need to do to go and win the league? And Liverpool have done it very well in certain games. Most of the time they press. They do the opposite. They press. But there's been every so often, and the Champions League final against Spurs was an example, where they said, OK, this is the game where we need to drop off and we'll catch Spurs on the counter-attack. So you do need to be able to change your game plan slightly to change the way things are going in a certain game.
I would trust Mourinho tactically to be able to do that. Whether he's got the personnel to do it, I'm not sure. But I want to just get final word from both of you. What role, if any, does Gareth Bale have in this year's Tottenham? Joel, starting with you, should we be thinking about starting him, or is he just a guy off the bench to change things? Or
I think you will start him in games where maybe you don't have to be as disciplined tactically as he wants the team to be, like
so against bad teams.
Like, or not, at least not as strong as Chelsea and City. There was no way he would either bring him on yesterday at 0-0 or against City at 2-0 up, or even start him in games where all you ask Bergwijn pretty much and Son on the other side, but certainly Bergwijn, is to defend. And every time they shout, Stevie, come back. That's all.
And he wouldn't be shouting, got it.
No, but no. I'm not sure if he can do as much as Bergwijn. If he wants to either, I don't know. But he certainly warmed up for a long time yesterday and just didn't come on. So I don't know. I think right now he's much of a Europa League guy, let's be honest. And then I think he will have his chance in certain league games, but not, I don't think, to this caliber where your discipline tactically has to be better.
I mean, given the job the wingers do, I mean, are you almost better off playing Gareth Bale at centre forward when Kane's not around?
Yeah, maybe. Although Carlos Vinicius is doing okay. I think you need it. You need to play him when you have 60% of the ball or at least over 50, and you play in the opposition half, not so deep like you did yesterday or last week.
Robbo, what do you do with Bale? Unlock the mystery.
Well, Jules was talking off air about the intensity of football and when you sit close to the game, how intense it is. I don't think Gareth Bale's got that intensity anymore. He hasn't played football for quite some while, and then he's not playing full games, he's only playing 60 minutes, he comes on as a sub. I don't think he's ever going to get that intensity. So Jules is absolutely right. The way you use him is bringing him on as a sub every so often in Europa League games. And I would play him, as you just mentioned, Gab, through the centre-forward position, because if you're playing in the wide areas for Spurs, you've got to recover. You've got to do the defensive side of the game. And I'm not sure Gareth Bale's got the motivation to do that, the fitness to do it, or the understanding to do it. So I think he's only going to play as a substitute on the bigger games, and he's only going to play as a centre-forward in the Europa League game. So there's no big role at the moment for Gareth Bale.
The interesting thing there, I think, is at the moment. I'm wondering if over time, if he does regain his mojo and his happiness and whatever, if you can build that fitness back up, build that intensity back up. You know, it's not like he's 37 years old.
No, that's true.
He's obviously had a lot of rest the last couple of years. if there's a way to do that, then he can be an asset in this team as something more than just an impact sub. Robbo, thanks so much.
Absolute pleasure.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Right, enough of that. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Manchester United come from 2 goals down against Southampton to win 3-2, thanks to a stunning 45 minutes from substitute Edinson Cavani. Jules, celebrate your boy.
A masterclass of a centre-forward performance it was. His movement, the runs that he makes into the box. I even thought his link of play was good, but he was certainly very efficient. The first goal, be very reactive on that sort of half volley that Bruno Fernandes didn't really aim at him, but most towards the goal. And the second one, crossed by Rashford, his movement is great, the timing is great for the header,
not to mention the cross to set up Bruno Fernandes' first goal.
Yeah, I just love seeing him like this because he deserves everything that happens to him. He's worked really hard, so well done, Edinson.
By the way, bit of love to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. We criticize when they're bad. I thought, even though there were 2 goals down, I thought they played really well in the first half. And nice to see our man Donny van de Beek
finally
in the starting lineup.
Indeed. On the flip side, however, Gab, Cavani's been investigated by the FA for using an inappropriate word in a social media post, which he quickly deleted. Gab, some are drawing parallels between that and the Luis Suarez and Patrice Evra incident of a few years ago.
Yeah, I mean, that term was obviously central at the time to the investigation, although that is not actually why Luis Suarez was banned. Look, I'm not an expert on this. I'm a white male. I'm not qualified to decide what is offensive, what should not be offensive. Yeah. What I will say, what I am qualified to do, because I have a brain and I look at the situation, I read the Suarez report, this context is completely different. Mm. There is a difference when you use that term in a confrontation with somebody who does not speak Spanish, like Patrice Evra, but does speak Italian, who takes offense to the term, and you're doing it in an aggressive way as part of a confrontation with him. And by the way, allegedly other things were said, which is part of the reason Suarez was ultimately banned. There's a difference between that and Edinson Cavani sending a message to his friend. Which is clearly in an affectionate way. Clearly, incidentally, his friend is also not a person of color, as far as we know. So it's completely different. The reaction is completely different. Cavani deleted it a few hours later after the issue was raised with him. Personally, I think anybody who's trying to muddy the waters here is being a little bit mischievous. Mm. Barcelona trounced Osasuna 4-0. Jules, corner turned. And how about that Lionel Messi tribute to Diego Armando Maradona?
We will start with that. It's not just the tribute, but Messi scores, takes off his Barca shirt underneath as a new old boy's shirt, where obviously Maradona played for a little bit towards the end of his career with the number 10. But what's the most striking is that the only goal that Maradona scored for new old boys is very, very similar to the one that Messi scored on Sunday.
I tweeted out some dude who put the two goals side by side. Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. Creepy. And Griezmann.
And Griezmann with a great goal. I mean, he played behind the striker that was Martin Braithwaite with Messi right and Coutinho left. I thought that worked really well. But listen, this is Osasuna. Let's wait and if we can see that kind of improvement against stronger sides. Liverpool are held by Brighton 1-1 and VAR is again upsetting a lot of people with this Andy Robertson challenge on Danny Welbeck for the penalty. What did you make of it?
I don't see how this is a VAR issue. First of all, people need to remind that we made a lot, was this a clear and obvious error? You can use VAR when there's a clear and obvious error, or you can use VAR when the referee hasn't seen it. I would like to think that if the referee had seen it, he would have given a penalty because Welbeck touches the ball away and Robertson catches him. That is a penalty. The fact that people didn't realize, the fact that people didn't complain. Welbeck, by the way, falls over. He didn't complain because he was on the ground. That's why he didn't complain. It's as simple as that. Yeah. I mean, it would be much better if we knew why VAR intervened. If VAR goes to him and says, hey, referee, did you see this? And he's like, no, I want to see it again. And that's it.
Exactly.
That's a penalty. I don't
see what the big deal is. It's like Mo Salah against West Ham. It's a very similar penalty.
Absolutely. Sticking with Liverpool, Jurgen Klopp Jurgen Klopp even is on the warpath again over five subs and early Saturday kickoffs.
He's not happy with Chris Wilder still for not wanting the five subs. He's not happy that when you play midweek in the Champions League, you have to play, or sometimes you play Saturday early kickoff. Basically accusing the broadcasters. The broadcasters
we've been through this. Yeah. We've been through this.
He's got a point. You need to be more coherent, is that what we say?
Yeah, but look, go to your owners. Your owners sit in the meeting. Your owners sign the contracts and say, look, you know, we want to be protected so that if you play on Wednesday, you don't play again on Saturday. Do it next time. If the TV companies tell you, okay, fine, but then you'll be getting a little bit less money because instead of showing Liverpool, I have to go and show Fulham or somebody nobody wants to watch. No disrespect, Fulham. Yeah. So be it, right? Yeah, sort it out exactly. Within you. And on the five subs, he's correct. But hey, I've said that enough times.
Napoli beat Roma 4-0 on Sunday night at the San Paolo, soon to be renamed Stadio Diego Armando Maradona. It was a very emotional night, wasn't it?
Of course, hugely emotional. The fans outside the stadium gathering. Lorenzo Insigne, who is Neapolitan, born and bred.
Could only be him scoring the first goal.
Scoring the first goal on a free kick. I mean, goalkeeper Mirante could have done better. But then going out and sort of, you know, kissing a number 10 jersey.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, goosebumps all around. And yeah. Big win for Napoli. Hopefully moves away some of the controversy the last few days. And hopefully Gattuso's now happy.
Yeah.
Neymar scores his 50th league on goal, but Paris Saint-Germain are held by Bordeaux 2-2, and Thomas Tuchel is grumpy, Jules.
Very grumpy, very unhappy. He said, usually I protect my players, but not today. This was not good enough. The second half, once again, they were leading at halftime, like against Monaco the week before, and they dropped points. He said, you cannot not play as a team like we did in the second half. No efforts, nothing. It's true that once Marco Verratti and Rafinha came off after the hour, the team just stopped playing. It was ridiculous. And I can understand his frustration because that was just not good enough in that second half from PSG. There's big games ahead and, I think there's a lot of pessimism around it as well. Bayern win away to Stuttgart 3-1. But Gab, they looked like the walking wonder, didn't they? Once again, a bit like against Wolfsburg in the Champions League. Not the best of performance.
No, look, they're tired. They're fatigued. Too much stuff isn't working when, they scored three goals. One was in garbage time, but the other ones, they come because of individual efforts, yeah. Not because of the team play. Flick has to tone down the intensity, which makes them less effective. I think they're also missing Joshua Kimmich in the middle of the park.
And Tolisso got injured?
Tolisso now injured as well. They can't control games because you don't have that playmaker in the middle. I think this is a little bit of an issue, but well done to my man, Rino Materazzo. Once again, yeah. It was only Manuel Neuer who saved the result,
incredible
I thought.
Performance from him.
It's another rough night for Arsenal as they lose to Wolves. Jules, what went wrong?
Everything. I don't know why he went back to a back four. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't think this is a team that is ready to play 4-3-3 football or even 4-2-3-1 if you want. Call it whatever you want. And Xhaka and Ceballos cannot protect a back four anyway. So, especially against a team like this when you know Adama, Podence and Neto have so much space and so great understanding between themselves. It was just not good enough from the team. I don't think it was good enough for Arteta. They need to wake up pretty quickly.
I know. And I want to see Lacazette earlier.
Yeah, me too. Gab, we saw also a terrifying clash of heads, between Raul Jimenez and David Luiz. Football's concussion protocol is under scrutiny again.
Yeah, so obviously I'm not a doctor here, so I'm in no position to judge. It's been confirmed Raul Jimenez has a fractured skull.
Yeah.
These things happen. I think one thing that you can say straight away about football is introduce substitutions if you've got head injuries.
An extra one, you mean?
Well, a temporary one.
Yeah, a temporary one.
Gabriel Jimenez off the pitch, David Luiz off the pitch, have them calmly assessed, ideally by an independent doctor. If they're in no condition to continue, substitute stays on. And if they can continue, they come back on the pitch and the substitute goes off. Same thing was with David Luiz. Now, people were incensed because apparently he was bleeding through his bandage. Apparently, from what we know, from what Arsenal tell us, he wasn't concussed. He simply had a deep cut. And look, if they're in a rush to try to get him back on the pitch, don't have to play with 10 men, maybe they don't bandage a cut as well as they might have. If they don't have the rush, because look, Rob Holding's out there, take our time, let's protect them, let's make sure we do it properly. And I know people will come up, but if you have temporary substitutions, people can game the system, get an advantage. You know what? This stuff happens so rarely, but it's so important when it does happen. Just introduce it. Come on, IFAB, we're all rooting for you.
Yeah.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Juventus are held by newly promoted Benevento 1-1 as Cristiano Ronaldo's given a day off. Jules, they've won just once all season without Cristiano.
Yeah, I thought it was slow. They had chances. They could have won the game on another night. Dybala has a great chance at the end. I can understand why they rest him against Benevento. If you can't win without him against Benevento, you will never win without him, but you cannot play him every single game. And overall, I was just a bit disappointed they conceded again. I don't know, and Morata that got sent off. He's going to miss the next game.
Odd that you're resting him ahead of the Champions League when you're already through, and some people say, oh, but he wants the Champions League scoring record and score even more.
Yeah,
I don't know, man. That.
Yeah. Inter win 3-0 against Sassuolo. Convincing win. Conte must be happy, right, Gabo? Still never happy.
When is this guy ever happy? No, he's not. He's not happy. Now he's a vast media conspiracy. Too much negativity around the team. Look, if it helps him create that siege mentality, that's great. Go for it. But the negativity's there because you're stinking it up in the Champions League and because you're not playing as well as last season. That's the reason negativity's there. It's not some vast media conspiracy.
It was a good game, though.
Manchester City beat up Burnley 5-0 as they usually do. It's a hat-trick for Riyad Mahrez, another Paris boy with techers.
Paris born and bred. It was too easy, of course, for him. Not like against Reguilon and Spurs in the way they did. But well done to City. They're gaining their mojo back a little bit in games like this. Maybe they should play Burnley every weekend. That would help. Borussia Dortmund somehow lose to Cologne, who were winless in their previous 18 Bundesliga game. Gab, are you going to blame Erling Haaland for that last-minute chance?
You should. You should.
Erling Haaland to go and bury that. I'm not going to go and blame Erling Haaland for the fact that they dropped points, because it's not just on him.
No.
Those two goals that they conceded against Cologne off of set pieces, carbon copies, the guy
exactly
completely
the
unmarked. All right, Thomas Meunier was off the pitch for the second one. You know what? People say, like, you need veterans to stand up. And I know this is a young team and some of the youngsters weren't good, but Emre Can, not young. Axel Witsel, not young. Mats Hummels, not young. You guys are leaders. Step up. And it's up to you, Favre, to get them to step up. Atletico Madrid beat Valencia 1-0. Jules, they're 1 point back with two games in hand. Is Diego Simeone's 3-5-2 the answer they were looking for? It's Cholismo 2.0.
It's Cholismo 2.0, although they're very versatile in the way they play, in the formation. He's used so many different formations. I just think that when Angel Correa plays on his own up front like this, I don't know, there's something missing. I think they still miss a bit of cutting edge. Even if Marco Llorente plays with him, even if you've got Carrasco on one side, or Felix was rested, didn't start the game, Suarez and Costa are still injured. So
you had Lemar, though.
Lemar played really well, and I like it, and I'm glad for him. I'm happy for him because he went through two very difficult years, and now you see the best of him. But it's the same for Joao Felix, and it's the same for Luis Suarez. When you play a bit higher up on the pitch with more of the ball, it's better for Lemar than when you play as a counter-attacking team. That's
what
not
I
what
like,
you can do.
What I like about this back three is it gets Hermoso on the pitch, who's been really, really good.
Yes.
And there's no deputized defensive midfielder. And when you've got three midfielders in Llorente, Saúl, and Koke, who I think he's been as good as he's been for years.
Yeah, that's true.
You've got three guys who can all play. And that means that you can then play possession, you can keep the ball without sort of sacrificing that defensive cover because you've got an extra dude back there.
Yeah, that's true.
I think this works. I think this is going to work well. I think it's going to work well when Luis Suarez returns as well.
Yeah, let's hope so. No Ibrahimovic, no Pioli, no Benacer, no problem as Milan defeat Fiorentina 2-0 up to stay top of Serie A and to even increase the lead at the top of Serie A.
That's right. People made a big deal to no Ibrahimovic. Like I said, for me, what was most impressive was no Benacer, because I've made this point before. This is not the Ibrahimovic of the spring.
Yeah.
Ibrahimovic this year is a guy who plays center forward, right? He sits up there and he converts. But you still need the whole team to create chances. He wasn't there. Some other dude is up there. That's fine. Can the team continue functioning? And whether the team functions depends on Benacer. In this case, Milan are kind of fortunate because there's no Benacer. And hey, bring in Sandro Tonali, right?
Of course.
Pirlo 2.0, right?
Exactly.
So he comes in, it worked well. Yeah. There's a great spirit about this team. And
Kessie even missed a penalty, a second one.
Frank Kessie missed a penalty. Yeah. And Kessie also set up a goal and scored a penalty.
Really
so,
good.
You know, you're getting the best out of him. Things are looking up. Real Sociedad and Villarreal battle to a 1-1 draw in La Liga. Jules. They're both near the top of La Liga, but are they both legit contenders?
I think it's a bit early, Gab. I would love to see them still in contention, you know, when we arrive in March or April. I'm not sure if they'll be there. You saw without David Silva that Real Sociedad, although they got a point, was not maybe as fluid as when David Silva is there.
He made changes too, Porto off the bench.
He made changes as well. And because let's not forget, unlike Villarreal, you know, they play in the Europa League as well. Yeah. So it's a lot of games already for them, for a squad that doesn't have the depth of the bigger squads, for example. So, but it's great to see them there, and it was a good game.
Fair to say Villarreal's results are probably better than their performances so far.
Yes, and a lot of penalties as well. Another one on Sunday night. Julian Nagelsmann mixes things up as Leipzig beat Arminia Bielefeld 2-1 to stay second in the Bundesliga. Gab, are they a bigger threat to Bayern than Dortmund are? Or at least more consistent, maybe? Or
I think they are a bigger threat to Bayern. Look, they're also a really deep team, which is important because so much of it depends on intensity.
Yeah.
The only living sore loss in captivity got to play again.
But missed the penalty.
Wasn't great at all. But you know what? They can also go back to the well, bring in somebody else in January if they need to. And of course, they could be going out of the Champions League, which I'm sure you would welcome.
I would love it.
And I think that could also help. So, look, if I had to guess now, I think Leipzig are right up there, also just 2 points behind Bayern.
Mm-hmm.
I think Leipzig are, right now, for me, they are, you know, out of the best of the rest, they are more of a threat than Dortmund. And I don't just say that because of Lucien Favre.
And who do Leipzig play next weekend? Oh, Bayern Munich, hey?
There you go. They could be top. On a melancholy note, Papa Bouba Diop passed away over the weekend. Jules, I remember him first and foremost in that Senegal team. He scored the goal that, of course, defeated the world and European champions France in 2002.
Yeah, that's right, Gab, in the opening game of the World Cup in South Korea and Japan. He was 42, had a long illness and lost his battle with that illness at the weekend. Great career. I think everybody loved him so much, you know, at Fulham, at Portsmouth, a couple at Birmingham, a few other clubs in England, in France, of course, at Lens as well, in Switzerland, where he started his career. The guy with a big, big heart, you know, and it's a real shame. It's a real shame. Tributes to Maradona all over the world, poured all over the world as well, Gab. We've spoken about some. What are the ones that stood out for you?
Well, one doesn't come from the football world, but the New Zealand, the All Blacks, played against Argentina.
Yeah.
And they laid down a Maradona All Black shirt, and then they did the haka. I thought that was absolutely breathtaking. Also, how could I not mention Dalmita
Nerea?
Yeah. His daughter in the Boca Juniors game, you know, breaking down and crying after they scored, and they all went to salute her. I mean, look, we've seen this all over the world, and I think it's only fitting, and I think some people fully understand the resonance now.
Yeah.
Right, that's all we've got time for, but guess what? We're going to be back on Thursday, aren't we?
Yeah.
All righty, man. We'll have Champions League, plenty all else going on. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.